Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 20, 2021. Chadian President Idriss Deby is killed in a battle with rebels.
His legacy is mostly of someone who tried to have Chad shine on the international scene, providing peacekeepers to various UN operations. But internally, he has done everything to consolidate power in his own hands and his family's hands.
And a Sudanese trader kidnapped in Lek State has been released.
I thank God for my brother who is here with us again. I have tried all means to get him. I reported to the police and I work cooperatively with them to find our brother.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Chadian President Idriss Deby, who ruled the Central African nation for more than 3 decades, was killed on Tuesday in a battlefield in a fight against rebels who opposed his rule. The country's top military commander announced on national television and radio. The announcement just came hours after electoral officials had declared Deby the winner of the April 11 presidential elections, paving way for him to stay in power for 6 more years. The army said the late president's 4-star general son, Muhammad Idriss Deby, will replace him at the head of a military council. For more, International Edition's Chinodu Ofor spoke with viewers Timothy Donang Maye.
His legacy is mostly of someone who tried to have Chad shine on the international scene, providing peacekeepers to various UN operations. But internally, he has done everything to consolidate power in his own hands and his family's hands. He has several sons and nieces and nephews who are in key positions in Chad. So many people in Chad believe that all the power was concentrated in his own family.
Now, talking about family, there are reports that his son is to assume the position of president or leader of the military council. What do we know about his son?
His son is a general. He has several general sons. His name is Muhammad Idriss Deby Itno. He is 37 and he is the head of the presidential guard. This is the most equipped corps of Chad's military. So he is in a strong position. He has that guard, the control of that guard. So he was well positioned to replace him. They set up a military council headed by that son of Deby. But according to Chad's constitution, the person next in the order of succession is the Speaker of the National Assembly.
It is stunning, isn't it, that a president was killed in a battlefield fighting rebels. What more do we know of what transpired before his death?
It's a tradition in Chad that the head of state sometimes goes to the front. You know, it was the case for the previous president, Hissène Habré, in December of 1990. He was on the front with former General Kamuge fighting Idriss Deby's rebels. And when he saw that the war was lost, he came back to N'Djamena and fled to Cameroon, then to Senegal. So, and also Deby being a general and a marshal, he thought it's expected that he goes to the front. He did it in the Lake Chad region when Boko Haram fighters killed about 100 Chadian troops there. He went there when Chad launched an offensive against Boko Haram.
Would it be a stretch to say that the sidelining of the head of the parliament by the general son of the late president, some are calling it a coup, is it?
In some way it is, because the normal succession process allows for the Speaker of the National Assembly to succeed the president. That's the normal order of things. But now that he's been sidelined, I don't know how else we can call it. It's a coup, in my opinion.
That's Timothy Donang Maye, VOA's director of the French to Africa service. He was speaking with my colleague Chinodi Ofor. A Sudanese trader kidnapped nearly 1 month ago in Lek State has been released after Sudanese traders in Rumbek town agreed to pay a ransom of 1.5 million South Sudanese pounds, which is equivalent to about $2,600. Salim Adambara, a trader in Rumbek market, says he was kidnapped at gunpoint near Kirimayardid Hospital on the 29th of March by three unknown armed men. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek.
Jamal Saleh Al-Zain Saleh, head of the Darfurian Traders Association in Lagos State, says the kidnappers demanded 1.5 million South Sudanese pounds, about $2,600, on the black market as a precondition to release his brother. Saleh says effort to hand over the money failed in the first instance, so the Sudanese traders asked for help from the members of the security forces in the negotiations, who handed over the money. South Sudan in Focus could not establish whether the kidnappers received the money or not, but Rumbek police confirmed the kidnapping took place. Police say they have one suspect in custody. Saleh says the kidnappers threatened to kill his brother if the traders didn't pay the ransom on time.
I thank God for my brother who is here with us again. I have tried all means to get him. I reported to the police and I work cooperatively with them to find our brother. I have been talking with the kidnappers who have been asking me to pay 1.5 million South Sudanese pounds. But I told them, where can I find you to give you the money? They switch off their phones. Thank God with the police collaboration, they were traced and one of them is now arrested.
Saleh praised the state authorities for helping rescue his fellow trader and single out police commissioner, General James Madudungor, for special praise.
I recognize police role in this matter. Since the disappearance of our brother Adam in March, after today, government has been working hard monitoring our brother in the bush. We appreciate all the process made to find him.
Barra tells South Sudan in Focus he was driven at the gunpoint from the hospital to the bush in Wulu, where he spent 21 days with barely enough food to eat. He says he also endured brutal acts in the hands of his kidnappers, like being tortured with the sticks and the barrel of a gun. He says he survived by eating wild fruits and was given only one cup of water a day.
I was caught in the night by three armed men at Kirumayar Women Hospital through Malwalbab until we reached in the bush. They tied my hands and feet with pieces of cloth. I suffered a lot in the bush. They tortured me, and there was no food to eat or water to drink.
Barra says once he was taken to the bush, he saw many others that appeared to be working with the kidnappers.
At first place, there were three people. But later, when we reached the bush, there were very many people. They passed me through Malwalbab after where they lay mud brick on the roadside to Wulu. I spent a sleepless night until I reached their place where I saw them in big numbers.
Police say they arrested one suspected kidnapper who is under military detention waiting further questioning. This marks the first time a trader has been kidnapped at the gunpoint in Lagos State. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabo reporting in Rumbek, Lagos State.
From Rumbek, we move to Uganda, where relations between the Ugandan People's Defense Forces and the media have been strained in recent months after several journalists were beaten by army while trying to cover a demonstration. In hopes of improving matters, top military officers played two friendly football matches with members of the media. Reporting from Kampala, Halima Athumani has the final scores and the impressions on whether the games may help army media relations going forward.
Brigadier General C.K. Asimwe is on the pitch.
This was no ordinary match. Guns and boots filled the Philip Omondi football grounds. Most of the spectators were dressed in army fatigues. The no-nonsense military police, feared by both the public and media, cheered loudly as the match between military generals and the heads of several media outlets kicked off. The army generals, decked out in white and blue shirts, were led by the Chief of Defense Forces, General David Muhoozi. The media team was dressed in neon green and grey and led by owners of media houses, Nation Media, the New Vision Group and several others. General Muhoozi says the march was meant to consolidate and strengthen the relationship with the media, given what he called the various highs and lows in their interactions.
No, we are not apologizing for anything. We are saying that we are partners. The other day you scratched me, I scratched you back, so... But bottom line, we are partners. We are in this together. We can't avoid each other. We are in each other's faces every day. So what better way to strengthen our partnership than through such light moments?
The first match between media managers and army generals ended 3-1 in favor of the media. A second match between field reporters and a team of captains, colonels and lieutenants ended with the media side winning again 3-0. The media may have been the better team Friday, but previously have been mercilessly beaten with batons and sticks by the same army. The last encounter was in February when several journalists were beaten as they covered a march by the National Unity Platform to deliver a petition to the UN Human Rights Office in Kampala. The party was protesting arrests, abuses and detention of their party members. Robert Sempala, the national coordinator of the Human Rights Network for Journalists, says Friday's marches were a good starting point for better relations.
They've been beating us and we are running away. They beat today, we run away again. And we are running to nowhere. So we thought we would have a convergence point to talk these issues out, to build trust, and that must be mutual trust, and to lay a foundation upon which we can relate.
Photojournalist Abubakar Roa was among those who walked out of a security press conference on December 28th after the army declined to apologize for beatings of journalists. He spoke about the football match.
It's a step that we are taking. We are not saying that all is going to be well, but we are hopeful that after this, at least we will have built some relationship, at least we will have something in common that unites us.
It is yet to be seen if the cheers, handshakes and unity displayed on the football ground will translate into safe and non-violent days ahead, especially for the media, when the same boots hit the ground again. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a community in Eastern Equatorial State is accusing the state governor of committing atrocities. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What is the best advice you have ever gotten?
I got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had a stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at personal protective equipment used by health workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. A company in Britain is giving new life to discarded personal protective equipment, or PPE, to help keep it out of landfill amid the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's Arish Arabsati has more.
Six hospitals in Britain's National Health Service, or NHS, have new machines that turn used PPE into a goo destined for remanufacturing. The Environment Director at Thermal Compaction Group, Matthew Rapson, says the machines address a growing concern.
We have a number of trusts now using our machines, and specifically to take out the plastics and also the face masks, which has become a huge problem in the current pandemic.
Items like face masks, gowns, and curtains, essential in safeguarding frontline health workers, have created thousands of tons of waste. Instead of incinerating or just tossing those items into landfills, the Welsh company cooks them for about an hour, yielding a 20-kilogram block of reusable material. The Environmental Services Association's Stephen Freeland says Britain's waste problem is much bigger than PPE.
There has been an increase in PPE that we're all well aware about. But the system, the waste management system, has coped. It's a very resilient system. We are not talking about huge amount of volumes of material compared to the overall amount that we're handling for the UK as a whole in any given year.
According to government figures, Britain produces about 220 million metric tons of waste each year, so PPE is just a tiny fraction of that. Still, Thermal Compaction Group's plastic blocks are already in use to make items like toolboxes and school chairs. The company says 11 other NHS hospitals will receive the equipment, giving new life to plastics otherwise destined for the landfill. Arash Arabsati, VOA News.
Still on COVID, the first passengers have begun arriving under a COVID-19 quarantine-free travel bubble between Australia and New Zealand. It allows unrestricted movement between the two countries that have managed to control the virus through strict lockdowns and border closures. For VOA News, Phil Massa reports from Sydney.
For the first time since the start of the pandemic, Australians can travel overseas and avoid mandatory hotel quarantine when they return. The so-called travel bubble with New Zealand started Monday, and thousands of passengers have flown across the Tasman Sea that separates the two countries. Many travellers are anxious to reunite with family and friends, while the tourism sector is hopeful it's the start of a brighter future. Airline bosses have said it was day one of the revival from the pandemic. To be eligible to travel to or from New Zealand on a quarantine-free flight, passengers must not have returned a positive COVID-19 test result in the previous 14 days. They must also not be waiting for the results of a test taken during that period. However, travel between New Zealand and Australia could be disrupted should future outbreaks of COVID-19 infections be detected. New Zealanders have been allowed into most parts of Australia since October, but travel the other way wasn't permitted. New Zealanders returning home also faced a mandatory 2-week stay in hotel quarantine upon their return. That requirement no longer applies. Despite the optimism generated by the travel bubble, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison is warning that he'll take a cautious approach to allowing unrestricted travel with other countries.
Australia is in no hurry to open those borders, can I assure you. 3 million people now who have died from COVID. The COVID pandemic is raging around the world. I will not be putting at risk the way we are living in this country, which is so different to the rest of the world today. The issues of borders and how they're managed will be done very, very carefully.
Australia's federal, state and territory leaders met Monday to discuss the National Inoculation Program, which has been widely criticised as too slow and inefficient. Concerns about the safety of the AstraZeneca vaccine have spread confusion and alarm among patients. Some doctors have reported a 50% drop in vaccinations in recent days. Health authorities are stressing that the drugs are safe and are a key part in the nation's coronavirus strategy. New Zealand has recorded 26 deaths related to COVID-19 since the pandemic began, while about 2,600 infections have been detected, according to health officials. Australia has recorded 910 fatalities and just more than 29,500 coronavirus cases. Both countries have closed their international borders to most foreign nationals. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Some members of a community in eastern Equatoria State and in the diaspora are accusing the state governor, Luis Lobanglo Jorio, of allegedly committing atrocities in their villages earlier this month. The community members say Governor Lobong sent heavily armed members of South Sudan People's Defense Forces to arrest, torture, and even killed people. Lobong denies the allegations, saying the forces were pursuing criminals who attacked a vehicle in the area. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
A Fourier community letter dated April 7, 2021 and sent to the offices of the UN Mission in South Sudan, President Salva Kiir, Amnesty International, Eastern Equatorial State and the National Parliament says Governor Lobong sent SSPDF forces on Easter Sunday to Kiala Payam, where the forces committed heinous atrocities. The letter, which was widely shared on the social media and seen by VOA, says it is not the first time Governor Lobong's administration has targeted locals in the area. Afurera Chief Michael Mojang Obel told South Sudan in Focus last week in a telephone call from his village that the incident occurred without the consent of local leaders.
I, the chief, was not even aware that something like this would happen in my village. We realized the government had already surrounded the village. They started shooting at people, pursued and ultimately caused all locals to run into the bush. The government also doesn't want to tell us why it sent soldiers to besiege Afurera's dwellers. They did not tell us.
Late last month, unknown gunmen ambushed Governor Lobong's convoy in Tirangore Boma. Lobong told South Sudan in Focus from Torit Town last Thursday that he dispersed forces to apprehend criminals from Afurere.
We have the list of criminals who have been carrying atrocities. It is the duty of the government to do so. When the forces went there, they were already alert, they ran away. And they could only find elderly men and women and some few people. These people were apprehended, they were brought to Torit, and we found they are innocent. And they were released, they went back the same day.
Mojang confirms authorities released all 12 youths who are commonly known by the local name Monyumiji. But Mojang charges that government soldiers killed one person during the Afurera raid, looted property, and raped women.
Truly, raping of women occurred. I am Michael Mojang Obel. I have to tell you the truth. 13 women were raped. All their reports filed. I have registered all the property looted from people's homes. There were 27 people who had complaints. Their linens were taken. Others, their beads for traditional wear were removed, and clothes for husbands were looted because all the men in the area had fled into the bush.
After the incident, the community held a meeting and agreed that Governor Lobong should compensate residents for the looted property and the youth killed by the soldiers because Lobong ordered a raid on Afurere, not on Budi County's Camp 15, where his convoy was attacked. Lobong says he and UNIMIS officials, peace committees and church groups visited and talked with the community's residents several times, but came away with the conclusion that the community is hostile to outsiders.
These people, if they really love their people, those arising from the diaspora, they should actually come to the ground and educate their own people and save their people, because people are even fearing the humanitarian services are fearing to go to Afurera because of being very hostile.
Governor Lobong denies the soldiers committed atrocities.
Let them prove their atrocities and let them compensate the atrocities that they have done to other people.
Lobong says it's unfortunate individuals in the Afurere community make life difficult for the rest of the residents. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Tuesday. Let us know what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song "The Storm Is Over" by R. Kelly.
I was in a tunnel and couldn't see the light. And whenever I'd look up, I couldn't see the sky. Sometimes when I'm standing, it seems like I done walked for miles. And my heart could be crying, dead in the middle of a smile. But then I climbed the hills and saw the mountains. I hollered help cause I was lost. Then I felt the strong wind. Heard a small voice saying the storm is over. The
storm is over now.
And I can see the sunshine
somewhere beyond the clouds.
I feel heaven, yeah.
Heaven is over me.
Come on and set me free. Now in the midst of my battle, all hope was gone. Downtown in a rush crowd and felt all alone. And every now and then I felt like I would lose my mind. I've been racing for years and still no finish line. Oh, but then I climbed the hills and saw the mountains. I hollered help cause I was lost. Then I felt the strong wind. And then a small voice saying the storm is over.
Storm is over now.
I can see the sunshine
somewhere beyond the clouds.
I can feel heaven.
Heaven,
yeah,
is over me. Oh,
come on and set me free. Somehow my beginning stepped right in. Then faith became my friend. And now I can begin all the voices of a wind. When it's saying, storm is over.
Storm is over now.
And I can see the sunshine
somewhere beyond the clouds.
We've been listening to R. Kelly with the song "The Storm Is Over." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.